Thanks for listening to the Best of the Odd Couple podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern, 4 to 7 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for The Odd Couple at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
You're listening to The Best of The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker.
News that just came out, about an hour ago. No one inducted into the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame. You're a voter. You had, four or five guys?
I voted for four, absolutely.
Your feelings, your thoughts?
Not totally surprised because it was really a thin ballot, Chris. There was really nobody. It wasn't like Derek Jeter was on the ballot from a year ago, you know, who's an automatic first ballot Hall of Famer, people like that. So, and then all the people who were on there who had the numbers, you know, had the taint of the steroid era. And these are the people I voted for. Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Gary Sheffield, and Sammy Sosa. Those are the four most deserving people on that ballot. And Bonds and Clemens got almost 62% of the vote. They got 1 year left, Chris, on the ballot, and then they can't get in by the writers. They'd have to get in through the Veterans Committee, which is made up of former ball players, GMs, managers, you know what I mean? People like that.
That'll be interesting.
Yeah.
For the guys that, you know, use PEDs.
Right. It will be. So they still have one more year. And the other guy who was on there was Curt Schilling. And Curt Schilling had 70% of the vote a year ago, Chris. Normally in the history of this vote, if you get 70%, the next year you're getting in. It's like,
well, he got 70% last year.
That's what I'm saying.
This year only jumped. Yeah, right. Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
So
normally
you're saying
that.
Right. Go ahead.
Because you only need 75%. So if you get 70, the next year you almost automatically get in. For him not to get in means he's not going to get in. Do you know what I mean? That's why he came out with this statement, which I'm sure you just saw, Chris, basically now saying that baseball writers, our evaluations don't mean anything to him, and he's going to wait for other players to vote him in
because the list next
to not even, because he knows he's not going to get in. That's why he's saying, take my name off. What'd you make of this?
I said last week when you revealed your ballot, I think Schilling should be in. And I know he doesn't have the 300 wins and all that, but that's a thing of the past. We know that. We're never going to see another 300-win pitcher. And I know some guys from his era still did win, you know, close to 300, if not 300. But we're talking about one of the greatest postseason pitchers ever. First of all, he was darn good in the regular season. He wasn't, you know, maybe all-time great in the regular season, but he was very good. What do you have, about a 3.5 ERA for his career? And then in the postseason, dude was nasty. 2.2, Rob, career ERA in the postseason. Led three teams to World Series. Helped break the curse in Boston. And what was he? I think 11-3 in the postseason. And I could almost equate him to an Eli Manning, whose regular season was good, but it wasn't that was going to get Eli Manning into the Hall of Fame. He's 11-2 in the postseason, Schilling. But he was so good in the postseason, Rob, an MVP of a World Series in Arizona. I think he deserves it. I think he deserves to be in the Hall.
You know what, Chris? I hear you, but he just falls short. He's very good. Here's the thing that hurts him the most. First of all, he never won a Cy Young, Chris, which in a 20-year career, not once were you ever considered the best pitcher in your league. Think about that.
No, okay.
Okay,
I mean,
so that
I'm sure there aren't a lot of guys in the, or at least a good number of guys in the Hall who never won the Cy Young?
No. I'm just saying, I'm not saying that there are none, but that hurts him. Here's the other part. His ERA.
Second, three times he was second.
Right. His ERA would be like 86th his ERA. So he doesn't have like this 86 all-time ERA is not that impressive for you to be amongst the elite, 86. And when you talk about postseason stuff, the difference between him and David Wells, and you would never consider David Wells a Hall of Famer. David Wells in the postseason, Chris, and you talk about Schilling and what he was able to do, did a lot of the same stuff postseason-wise. And the only difference is David Wells won 20 less games in the regular season, and he didn't get in. And from my standpoint, I didn't vote for Jack Morris from the Tigers. I didn't vote for Mike Mussina from the Yankees and Orioles because they're all like a Curt Schilling. Very good, but not Hall of Famers. And here's the other people who might think that Curt Schilling isn't getting in because the writers don't like him.
Right.
People need to get off of that.
Or some of the stuff with social media.
Right.
He's very conservative.
And he's a Trump guy and all that. That's just not true. First of all, Chris, you know this. Everybody in the press box are not Democrats. I don't know where people get that from, first of all. That's not true.
There's probably a good number of writers that agree with
exactly.
Politics.
No doubt about it. Number two, we've talked about it on this show before. Barry Bonds was a bad guy to the writers, Chris. He wasn't our friend.
Right.
He was a bad guy. The writers voted him 7 times the MVP. If they wanted to take it out on him, they could have. So I don't believe that.
Well, I'm with you, and we've talked about that before, how writers, if you really check the record, they've been very objective. Everybody's human, but
right.
for the most part, they've certainly been, and we've certainly been, the most objective of anybody, players,
even
coaches.
More so than players.
Right, no question.
We talked about it. The players didn't vote for LeBron James for the All-Star, 150 players.
That's ridiculous.
Think about
but
that.
Here's the one thing I will throw back at you, though, Rob.
All right.
If indeed it doesn't matter, the politics don't matter to the writers, why do you think he didn't make the jump? Like you said, usually if you get 70% of the vote, you get in the next year. Or he didn't even get close. Like he didn't get to 73, 74, you know what I mean? So do you think some of his politics, I don't doubt that maybe that had a factor.
Maybe with a few, Chris, but for the majority, I don't believe that. I think this organization, people have a vote. There's 330 million people in this country, and only 450 people vote. It's a small, select group of people, and most of them are like me, Chris. They take it very, very seriously. You know, I've told you that before. Since I don't have any kids, it's my most prized possession on this earth,
right?
Other than having kids and if I was married. Seriously, it means that much to me. So I take it very seriously. I don't believe people have just flipped. They don't like him, or he said something, or he tweeted something. They're bad guys in the Hall of Fame.
Well,
right? Ty Cobb was a bad guy.
That's what I wanted to ask you. Because, Rob, and you know, obviously character is important to me. I think character is highly important in a society. However, let's just face it. There are so many questionable characters.
Yes.
In all of the sports Hall of Fames. Football,
all
basketball,
of them.
Baseball, hockey.
Did some bad stuff.
Right. That I got to be honest, Rob. I've come to the conclusion, and obviously I don't want to belittle character in life or to young kids growing up playing sports or whatever, but when it comes to the Hall of Fame, Rob, I separate. I don't know that should be a factor. I really don't.
And now I'm not talking about Pete Rose.
I'm not talking about a Pete Rose who cheated the game. But like you said, there are guys who beat their wives in the Hall of Fame. There are guys who've, like you said, Ty Cobb was just an overt racist. There are other guys. I mean, there's all types of bad characters and bad apples in the various Hall of Fames. Lawrence Taylor, his transgressions are well documented.
They had to pull him out of crack houses in order to get him to play on Sunday. He was a first ballot Hall of Famer. Nobody even thought about it. Now, here's the other part. I do. Rob G slipped me this note, and I almost forgot this. Mariano Rivera, who people love, is one of the biggest Trump supporters. Chris, he got in unanimously.
Right.
So Curt Schilling can't tell you that it's because he's conservative or Republican that he didn't get votes. Like, not, I'm not saying that there might not have been a couple people, but right. Mariano, of all people, Chris, got in unanimously, the first player ever. And if somebody wanted to hold the Trump stuff against him, they could have easily done it.
Right, right. No, that's true. That's true. So where are you at on the character issue? I mean, do you agree with me, or what's your thoughts?
It doesn't work. You'd have to be, to me, ruled ineligible by baseball for me not to vote. Yeah. Because the precedent's already been set.
Right.
You already got people in there. So I can't play judge and jury and say who's a good guy and who's not a good guy.
Agreed.
But this is interesting about Curt Schilling. And one last thing before we hear from our listeners, Chris. Hello, this is a message to Curt Schilling. The Baseball Hall of Fame, the awards, right? And the vote. Those are ours, Chris. The Baseball Writers of America, the Baseball Writers Association of America. We came up with it. Baseball adopted it from us.
Right.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
Those are our awards.
You
that's
think
why
you'll
we vote.
In on the vets committee?
Curt Schilling, maybe.
Yeah.
If he's got enough friends, he could. Because a lot of the questionable guys in the Hall of Fame, and I say this.
Yeah, they got in. All,
got in through the back, what I call the back door through Veterans right. Committee.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker. Weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
He's a three-time NBA champion, critical member of one of the best teams of all time, former NBA coach of the year. He's done about all you could do at the NBA level. Byron Scott. Byron, welcome to the Odd Couple,
What's up, Byron?
Brother's doing.
We're doing good, man. Good to have you on, and Happy New Year.
We wanted,
obviously, today is the one-year anniversary of Kobe's death. You hear a lot of people talking about where they were. You know, when it happened, it's one of those moments where you just remember where you were. What were you doing when you heard the news? And I mean, what thoughts were going through your mind, if you don't mind sharing?
No, I don't mind at all, man. Happy New Year's to you two brothers as well. You know, it was a Sunday morning. I was dressed, sitting in front of the TV, watching the PGA tournament. I can't remember which one it was, waiting on my wife to get dressed so we can go to church. And my wife, as she always does while she's getting dressed, she's always on her phone, you know. So, you know, if we got to be somewhere at 10, I always tell her 9:30 because I know we're going to be there.
You already know, right.
I already know. So, but church, you know, you know what time it's starting and everything. And I was like, baby, we got to go. And then all of a sudden I'm sitting there, man, and she starts screaming. And she's just screaming and saying, oh, my God, oh, my God. And I'm like, what? She said, you know, Kobe just, you know, died. I said, get out of here. Yeah, nothing in me would make me or let me believe that. And then I started hearing all the stories that morning. I still was like, no, I don't believe it. You know, all my boys start calling me. My phone is going off the hook. And we got in the car to go to church. And then TMZ broke the news, and you know, at the beginning it was, you know, Rick Fox was in the helicopter with him, and you know, just so many different things, and I was just like, nah. So by the time we were about halfway to church, it was pretty. Then it was everywhere. You know, it was true that Kobe and Gigi had passed away in a helicopter crash along with you know the other passengers. And I turned around and went home. I can't go to church. I just need to go home. My phone was, I stopped answering my phone. It was just so surreal to me, you know, Chris, that, you know, this young man who I had talked to probably about 3 weeks prior to that, you know, just chopping it up, you know, seeing how retirement was going, how life after retirement was going and what else he was working on. And then to get that news, it was just devastating. And, you know, for the next 4 or 5 days, I basically just stayed home. I've never felt that bad. That was the worst feeling I've ever had. You know, our second worst, I should say, because the worst was when my mom passed. That was, you know, it's on that level. You know, there's somebody who I've known, you know, since he was 17 years old. You know, when he came into this league, got to know him, you know, on a deeper level than most people would have ever gotten a chance to know him. And he was just a true friend. And that was something that I truly just, I don't, even to this day, my friendships with my closest friends that I grew up with, and I got four or five from high school, from elementary school, I take that, I don't take that for granted. I take it very serious, you know, because you don't get friends like that. I can still picture myself, to be honest with you, sitting on the foot of the bed, looking at the tour, and my wife starts screaming. It was, you know, even though it's been a year, it seems, you know, still like yesterday.
Wow. And it doesn't matter. Like when you lose somebody, you know, it hurts. They could be 100 years old and it still would hurt. But when a guy, you know, Byron, you lose a guy that young with so much life left and so many things that he was going to do in his second career and his children and his wife, that makes it even harder, doesn't it, when a guy's that young?
Oh, absolutely. And you guys have seen, you know, seen Kobe with his daughters, and you've seen him with Gigi and his family. I mean, he would bring Gigi to practice. And, you know, after practice, she would go out and shoot, and he would be like, "Coach, man, she's got me all in her. She's going to be a beast." And I would just sit there and listen to him and watch. And he was so proud of his girls, you know, and he was so proud of Gigi because she had taken that basketball path like him, you know. So he was just enjoying every minute of it. And I was just sitting there in awe of just, you know, their relationship and how he just would go out on the court with her and just show her certain things. And then I'm looking at a video a month later and she's doing step backs and fallaways. And I'm like, oh, my God, you know. And it was just amazing to watch him as a father because, again, you know, you guys got to remember, I saw him at 17 years old when he was calling me Mr. Scott in Orlando, Florida at the NBA rookie transitional program that I was involved with, and he was on my team. And now all of a sudden I'm watching him with his daughter and the pride that he had, you know, and the joy that he had with Gigi and just all his girls, just how he, just the family man that he was, how much he loved his girls. So it is so much harder when a guy has so much more life to live. And, you know, Kobe, you know, he was writing more things. I mean, he just won an Oscar. You know what I'm saying? Right. I mean, you know, for you know, his basketball. I think I Love Basketball or something, a basketball diary.
Dear Basketball.
Something like that.
But, Dear Basketball. Yep.
Yeah, Dear Basketball. So, I mean, he was talking about writing it, you know, writing more things. And the thing that used to kill me during our 2 years together, especially the last year, he would call me at 5 a.m. and I was like, "Man, I'm not up. I don't know why you even up."
Right.
You
right.
know, and
don't
I
call
said,
my phone.
Doing?
Right.
Yeah. I'm like,
was he on his way to practice
doing?
Or something?
No, he was calling to see about practice. You know, what we're doing today, coach. And I'm like, "Look, man, you know what? Today, I had already told you yesterday, don't even come today. I don't need you in practice today. I'll see you tomorrow at the game." Stuff like that. I said, "What are you doing up?" "I'm working." Yeah, I mean, he was always working, you know, just working on new things that he had in his mind. And I would just sit there and shake my head like, "This dude don't sleep." And then when he get to practice, we would talk about, you know, some of the things that he was working on or some of his ideas. And he was always about knowledge, you know, always about knowledge, man. So it's even more difficult, like you said, Rob, when you know somebody has so much more to give and so much more life to live.
Byron Scott, three-time NBA champion, joining the iCouple. Now, you had such a unique situation with Kobe. You played with him his first year in the league as a rookie, and you coached him his last year in the league. That's great. And I've talked about how, just as a reporter, seeing the growth of Kobe from 17 to 38 or whatever he was when he retired – How did you see, like, I mean, you saw this guy grow up and become a man. So what was that like for you? Like, what was he like as a rookie, 17-year-old, to when you saw him his last year as a grown man?
As a rookie, Chris, the one thing I always told, you know, people that were very close to me when they asked about him, I said, "Man, at 17, 18 years old, he was the most mature 17, 18-year-old I've ever seen, because he had already in his mind what he wanted to accomplish." You know, he had already set that goal. He already got in his mind what he had to do to get it. So in his mind, he had to forget about a whole lot of stuff, like 17-year-olds and 18-year-olds do, which is partying and having fun. He was like, I can't do that. You know, I mean, I never seen a 17, 18-year-old so mature and so driven. And wow. Sitting down and talking to him, you know, during practice or after practice, you know, about the game and about, you know, what if a guy does this? What should I do? You know, I mean, he was just one of those guys that was never afraid to ask questions either. And to watch him at 37, you know, his last game when he, you know, he would come in the locker room and sometimes I would be in the back and he'd come behind me and just give me a big old bear hug and be like, how you doing, coach? Everything good? I said, yeah, I'm good. You all right? You know, you ready to go? He's, you know, give me one of them. Am I ready? Go. You know, I'm, you know, and I was like, yeah, well, I forgot who I'm asking. You know, I forgot who I'm asking.
You know what's crazy? I just want to squeeze this in and just get your thoughts on this. Out of all the things Kobe Bryant accomplished, the thing that stands out the most to me, and I know this sounds crazy, is when he put up the air balls his rookie year in the playoff mm-hmm. game mm-hmm. against, what was that, Utah they were playing? Against Utah. Shaq was on that team.
I was on that team.
You, Byron, you know what I'm saying. Like that yeah, stands guts, out because guys who, first of all, one air ball is enough. Most guys would roll into a shell. I thought to myself, who is this guy with Shaq on his team taking the last shot and putting up two air balls at the end of a game?
Yeah.
Does that make sense to that stands out to me?
Oh, right. That makes so much sense because, I mean, that's one of two or three things that stand out. I mean, his rookie year, because I was on that team, and I was playing in that playoff game and hurt my wrist, and Dale Harris had to play Kobe, you know, when we went to Utah because I couldn't play.
Right.
And so I felt so bad because I didn't think he was ready at that time. And obviously, you know, he wasn't, but he thought he was. I mean, like you said, he took you know, two shots with the game on the line when you got Big Shaq down there, you know, right. All-Star. And they both were air balls. And, I mean, when I say air balls, they wasn't close.
No.
And they were the kind of shots. And that was the kind of moment that can make or break a guy. You know, I mean, it could just, you know, your career could just go real south real quick when you shoot air balls in that type of environment, in those conditions with the game on the line. You know, but he came back the next year with a vengeance, you know, and that, you know, one of the reasons during practice and all the stuff and all the times that we talked, and I did that interview a long time ago, and I said, you know, mark my words, this guy is going to be unbelievable because I knew he had no fear, and that was just going to make him stronger. And it's one of three things that stick out for me, you know, with him. And, you know, that's the first one, obviously. You know, the second one is the 60-point game that he had, you know, which was unbelievable, his last game in his career. And the third thing is just, you know, all the times that we had that we just was just talk. You know, it wasn't one particular time. It was just all the times that we had where we just talked. We reminisced or we talked about certain things or he would call me and say, you know, coach, I need to talk to you about this. You know, those are memories that I'll never forget.
All right. That's the great Byron Scott.
Thank
reminiscing
you, Byron.
About Kobe
Thank
Bryant.
You so
Thank
much.
Thank you. Yes. Great stories. We appreciate
you.
Man, you know I love you guys anytime.
Thank All right,
you,
brother. Thanks a lot.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
The Packers, obviously, tough loss on Sunday to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Tom Brady. And Aaron Rodgers, in his post-game press conference, created quite a buzz when he said...
He was shell-shocked. He was. He had to be shell-shocked, Chris, after that game.
After the loss?
Yeah, well, just the way it played out.
You mean the way people took his words? Or are you talking about just shell-shocked from the game?
From the game, you know what I mean, getting a chance to throw it to fourth down, like giving another opportunity.
Absolutely. And he said, you know, there are a lot of guys with uncertain futures. You know, they got Aaron Jones, their top running back. A lot of people think he'll be gone. He'll be a free agent. Mercedes Lewis, who is Rodgers' best friend on the team, may be gone. And Rodgers said, we got a lot of uncertainties about the future, including my own. And he's under contract, Rob, remember, till 2023.
Right, there's still
and
three
next
more
year,
years, right?
Yeah, next year, it's like if the Packers wanted to get out of it, next year would be the time. So there really was in my mind, there really isn't much reason to even bring that up if you're Aaron Rodgers. But he did,
and it caused a stir. Does he want out? Are they going to get rid of him? Whatever. And today he went on the Pat McAfee show and tried to clear things up. Here he is.
I don't feel like I said anything that I hadn't said before. You know, I said it the first time I talked to the media. Just, it was more a realization, I think, that ultimately my future is not necessarily in my control. I don't think that there's any reason why I wouldn't be back. But look, I think there's not many absolutes, as you guys know, in this business. So to make an absolute statement about something that is not an absolute, I didn't do it, you know, and I guess that's why I went kind of nuts.
Now, Rob, I'm about to turn it over to you, but there was a report in Pro Football Talk, Mike Florio, according to a source close to Rodgers, saying Rodgers wants a new contract. Now, that is why he said what he said right after the game on Sunday. Now, I'm going to say this and then turn it over to you. He didn't, in that little blurb we just heard from the Pat McAfee show, he didn't sound like a guy who was looking for a new deal. Now, he might be, but you know what I'm saying? Like, it didn't sound like he was playing games and being, you know, calculated and all that. But what are your thoughts on this whole thing?
Well, I think what he was saying had some truth to it. I'm with you. His contract doesn't call for them to cut him loose. Chris, there are times when in the NFL when there is that year where if you cut him loose, it's not going to cost you a lot. Bill Belichick did that in New England a million times, Chris, with great players, right?
Right. There's and Big Ben this year. We talked about that before. Big Ben this year could be the year.
Exactly. So that's not unusual. I'm with you. I think just because he even made a question of whether or not he would be back, and I think he was talking about the team because of all the loose strings and people becoming free agents and, you know, like the Packers have a three-headed monster at running back. Do you let Aaron Jones walk, Chris, and go with the other two younger guys who are cheaper? You know what I'm saying? Like, that's football. That's what happens a lot when other guys emerge and you realize, well, we could use somebody else who's a lot cheaper and we could use money elsewhere. So I'm with you on that standpoint. The new contract, I'd be surprised when he signed it. It was a big contract. He's still getting paid big dollars. It's not like he's dwarfed under and he's not making. Yes, he's coming off of what looks like an MVP year, right, Chris? That he'll win the MVP. Right? So does he have any leverage? Is this your last contract at 37 years old? Can you squeeze a little more guaranteed money out of the organization? You know, maybe that's the case. But I'm with you. From the sound bites that I heard from the show, I didn't get a sense or a real angst like, you know, I'm fired up, I'm pissed, I don't want to be here, they're going to have to pay me to stay here. You know, there's things that you could have heard in a conversation, and I'm saying I didn't hear the whole interview, but from the sound bites I heard, I didn't get that feeling.
Yeah, that leak where he wants a new deal, it almost sounds to me like that may have come from the Packer side. And it might be somebody that's somewhat in the know, but I'm with you. And I'll tell you this. I don't think that Rodgers was thinking that way. And I don't want to believe that he was thinking that way. I mean, moments after a bad loss, when you played well, but you know, you
not
didn't
good enough.
You weren't
not
right.
Good
you
enough.
Weren't
right.
Tremendous. You weren't great, but you played well. I would hate to think. And Rob, think about it. Do you think he's thinking, man, they better pay me next year? You
know, I don't believe
he's hurt over the loss.
I
mean, this was the year he had everything he wanted, the home field advantage. He's going to be the MVP, best year.
Right, exactly.
Right, so I just don't believe that at that moment in time. Now, look, if it comes up next week, you know, a month from now, then that's fair because he is underpaid. You know, his cap number is a lot higher than his actual salary. Rob G, isn't he making something like $23 million next year or something like that?
Correct, because he got most of his money in bonus early.
Right, because he got it up front. I mean, and in the NFL, Chris, you want your money up front.
Exactly.
So he got
all of it up front as much as you can get.
Right,
absolutely.
When he got paid, he if you took $50 million and put it in the bank, you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
The salary's not nearly as important.
Yeah,
so I don't know. It's a weird story that that was out. But you might be right, Chris. Could have been floated by somebody on the Green Bay side. I don't expect him going anywhere. Obviously, they drafted Jordan Love. Aaron sat for 3 years. They drafted him when they had a Hall of Fame quarterback in Brett Favre. He didn't play for 3 years, Chris.
You don't see that anymore. For 3 years, no. And I believe the salary structure probably was different than it is today. You know, they're going to have to decide on Jordan Love. Like, do we resign him, you know, at some point in that third, after that third year or whatever. But
Jordan Love didn't even suit up this year, Rob. No, not
even
like
he was backup. He wasn't carrying the clipboard. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's no way. And I would be, I'm sorry. The Green Bay Packers, let's give them credit. They found a way to do what most teams have not done, which is, after you lose a great quarterback, you know this, right? You saw it with Miami, Dan Marino, Dallas, and Troy Aikman. Right. You see it over and over again. When the great quarterback leaves, generally, Jim Kelly in Buffalo, John Elway in Denver, you go through a down period. Yes. Yep. And they avoided that by drafting Rodgers. But, Rob, if they were to go to Jordan Love, and I'm with you, I don't think they will, next year – I'm like, what are you in it for?
I mean, really,
are you in it just to be relevant, just to have your community team, you're pretty good, and the folks in Green Bay love you and all that? Or are you in it to win Super Bowls? Because I'm telling you, Rob, and, you know, I had fun with you yesterday, and obviously I had the Buccaneers in the game. Green Bay got a good chance next year to win it.
Right.
You run that thing back, period. There's no doubt of, if you don't run it back, then to me, you're not really trying to win Super Bowls.
I agree. There's no way you can make a change like that off of a quarterback. Chris, it would be unprecedented that a quarterback got you to an NFC Championship game, was the MVP of the league, and you went with a guy who didn't even dress last year. Like people would be like, what? Even people in Green Bay. And I get it. You'd rather get a guy out of there, Chris, a year earlier than a year late, but not coming off an MVP season.
He's going to be great next year, too. Whether he's MVP or not, he's still going to have a good season.
And here's the other part. At 37, Chris, he's a little different than your typical 37-year-old for one reason. He didn't play his first 3 years. Do you know what I mean? Like, he didn't have the wear and tear that a normal 37-year-old would have. That's a little bit of an advantage. I'm not saying like he's 27, but do you know what I'm saying? Three years not playing.
No, but you're right. I mean, look at Roethlisberger.
Right.
He's more beat up. And plus, as we know, Rob, guys are just now everybody's not going to be Tom Brady. But heck, Drew Brees, 42, you saw the decline. But last year he was really good at 41. 40 was really good. So what's to say Aaron Rodgers can't do that? If he wants a new deal, would you extend him? What would you do?
Coming off this year and how he looked, if it could be workable. But it would have to be, give the guy some money, not a long-term deal, Chris. Look at it and say, we're banking, and we want to give 3 more years and get a chance of winning a Super Bowl.
Right,
I would sign him for 3 years, up the money, whatever, but a 3-year deal. Have Jordan Love ready to go after 2 more years. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That would be my plan.
Their thought process cannot, and I get it, maybe Jordan Love, he obviously didn't show him too much because he didn't even get in the uniform, but, your thought process can't be, well, what about Jordan? I'm sorry. It can't be that. And I'm with you. Like, I would try to talk to Aaron about, let's play this out, like you said, maybe another year or two added on or something. I wouldn't try to go too far with it. Because obviously, like we said, he's locked up till 2023.
Right. And
3 years left. So.
In that article, Chris, on Pro Football Talk, it was about that he wanted it because he wants the Packers – he wants a commitment from the Packers.
Right.
And I get it. When you go out and draft that guy, he was that guy. He eventually replaced, Brett Favre.
Yep.
So he knows he was that guy. He replaced a legend, right?
Yep.
So I understand it. He knows what goes on. He knows the business. He can't act like it's a shocker because he was in the same situation. But I expect him to be business as usual, Chris. If they could work out a deal to compensate him for what he was able to accomplish this year and a little bit of a commitment to say, we're committed to you for the next 3 years. We're trying to win a Super Bowl before you hang it up.
And right. I believe LaFleur when he said he wants him back next year. Like,
oh,
there's no
I do
way
too.
Because, look, at the end of the day, you can talk about, well, you know, Rodgers might be, he's bigger than Matt LaFleur. Does LaFleur want a quarterback that's not as big as him? At the end of the day, Matt LaFleur wants to win a Super Bowl.
Right.
Especially, Rob, coming off of this fiasco when he made that bad call. So, come on. I think he'll be back.
Chris,
I'd be shocked if he's not back at least next year.
Right. And he knows his better chances are with Rodgers. Come on.
Absolutely.
Anybody would know that. So that would be child's play.